show.
She was doing a great job of face.
That is it.
Welcome in to Pound for Pound, your home for all things combat sports. I'm joined by my incredible co-hosts, Chris Carino and Mahdi Dembele. We're going to be talking a little bit of 302 reactions, and then from there, we're going to talk about this fight this weekend, Gervonta Davis versus Frank Martin for the WBA lightweight title. And then we also have a little bit of a UFC fight night, not the greatest card, but a little bit of an interesting main event with an up-and-coming prospect in Tyra. And then after that, we'll talk a little bit of UFC news with UFC 303 currently in jeopardy with the notorious Conor McGregor maybe holding out on his side. Nobody really knows right now. Maybe our Ariel Helwani has a little bit of the scoop. But to start off, how are you guys doing today?
I'm good. I'm good. It's kind of an interesting point right now in the UFC calendar. I think everyone's still kind of having a bit of a hangover, just 302 being so exciting, everyone seemingly still talking about it, and the repercussions kind of still kind of ringing out as the weeks kind of transpire afterward. And now we have a fight night this week, a lot of things ahead as well. It seems like Dana is kind of prioritizing this summer as a big one for his company. So a lot to talk about, even a little boxing. But yeah, we'll get into all of it.
Marty, how are you doing today?
Yeah, as for me, always good to talk cage with some of my favorite people in the world. Again, this fight night, I mean, something special could really, really happen in this fight. The boxing world's going forward for the rest of the year is going to be very, very exciting. So, I mean, let's buckle up, and I'm ready to talk some fight world, if you may.
Yeah, definitely. And since we didn't get our episode in last week, we're just going to go quickly talk about UFC 302, because that was a pretty big deal. And we saw a lot of, we learned a lot about possibly the future of the middleweight division. We'll start there with the co-main event, Sean Strickland versus Paulo Costa. And it was a little bit of a weird one, especially because we got to the decision and one of the judges scored the fight for Paulo Costa. And we got a split decision. Sean Strickland obviously came out as the winner. However, a little bit of controversy with the scoring. So, I mean, how did you guys see it?
I mean, if I could take this one from the hospitality of Zach's very own man cave, I got to witness the fight. And when you're talking cage and you talk specifically about Paulo Costa, I don't know how much more further you can go than I feel like he should be a lot better. You see this big guy, 6 foot lumbering with power in both hands, but I mean, some of the worst fight IQ I've seen in my life. I just feel like we talk about Paulo Costa because of the drought that is the middleweight division. You're talking about really three guys there. You're talking about Sean. You're talking about contender Izzy, which is going to be fun as hell. And you're talking about Drakus. I mean, Jared Cannon here is going to come back. Let's see what he can do. But guys like Vittori and guys like Costa, they're kind of in the back burner of guys you look at and should go, he should be a lot better. A lot of these fights, winnable fights. We talk about that Israel Adesanya fight where he lost. I mean, it's not like he got knocked out or anything. He stood right in front of Izzy, and Izzy kicked his legs a million times, and he went from under it. So it's like every time I see Paulo Costa on a card, it's like in the back of my mind, it's almost like an automatic loss. And he proved it again. Sean Strickland having to push the pace. You saw Sean Strickland. He's not an athlete at all, but he did like a flying knee to attempt to push the pace of the
at the end.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes it's just there for Paulo Costa and he doesn't take it. So good dispatch win, and dispatch, I do say, because it was very clear who won that fight. Good dispatch win for Sean, and Paulo, skill issue, get better.
Yeah, I think this fight's very interesting. I think words that kind of are used to describe a lot of the takeaways of most fights that we watch is very discreet and subtle. I feel like a lot of the takeaways of this fight were very obvious and kind of right in your face. Kind of going into this fight, I felt, you know, Sean was coming in, this angry fighter, this guy who said he was going to fight angry, which I think everything in his character leading up to that showed that that was going to be a scary thing. And then on the other side, Paulo is, you know, just his normal Paulo Costa, the Terminator mantra, all of that. These two characters coming to a head, it seemed like kind of a match made in heaven in all ways. And then they get in the octagon. It was weird because Paulo Costa is a guy, you know, picked up the mantra Terminator, as I just said, where he's either standing still or going forward. And he's not really moving backwards. The back foot is kind of a foreign concept to Costa leading up to this fight. This whole fight, he was seemingly on the back foot. Sean was kind of lunging at him, approaching him for most of this fight. That has to do with the angriness that Sean was fighting with, for sure. But then there's a whole other element where Paulo Costa really felt that kind of fighting on the back foot, doing the opposite of what he normally does, literally doing the opposite of what his normal game plan, normally would be, would favor into his kind of energy conserving world very well. And that would conserve energy in a way that he hadn't before in previous fights and probably would give him energy in the later rounds. But I feel like this backfired on him in a major way. It takes you completely out of the traditional game that got you there. And yeah, you're trying to conserve energy, but like he said at the end of the fight, in the post fight, where he said F conserving energy, it doesn't really matter. It's not a huge priority if you're not kind of giving off that, for a lack of better word, aura that you normally give off. And you take away kind of your traditional move set and your traditional kind of fighting set. And also, it just makes it where you're not even you. And it doesn't even feel like Sean Strickland really beat Paulo Costa.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And Sean Strickland kind of has a way too, though, of he does this to almost everybody. I think the only person I think kind of stood in a standstill with him was Du Plessis, because they're both two guys who fight always going forward. But Sean Strickland has a way of just being in people's faces. And when you and when you have somebody who's checking every leg kick, blocking every shot you throw, and he's moving forward and he's in your face, it causes a pressure that you can't really deal with. And for Paulo Costa's style, his whole game is built around being able to move forward and be powerful, be a bully. That's his fight style. And you can't bully Sean Strickland. You can't push him back. And we've learned that now with everybody he's fought. You can't push the guy back. He is always moving forward and he's blocking everything you throw at him. So I think it was just a dominant performance from Sean Strickland. And we're kind of seeing him it come to light now how good he really is. Especially in his own kind of unorthodox MMA stance, obviously utilizing kind of the Philly shell and the way that he does it. And no one else can do it like him in MMA. And that style has just been perfect for him, and especially the guys that he's fought with, Izzy, Du Plessis, and now Paulo Costa. He's able to push these guys who have a lot of power, he's able to push them back, and they're fighting off the back foot the other time, and then they can never get going. And
Zach,
honestly, I think this was sorry before to let you go for a second. I think this was a complete mistake on Paulo Costa's camp side to agree to 5 rounds. I don't understand why they call this a five or why they agreed to 5 rounds when I think 3 rounds would have really benefited Costa, because in the long game, in terms of his gas tank and the way that he fights, if he's able to just let go and fight a 3-round fight at a pace that he's used to, he has a better chance of winning that fight. You play that 5 rounds, that's Sean Strickland game, and I think that's exactly why he got the win.
Hey,
Sorry, go
Zach,
ahead.
that's Zach. Just and before Madi goes, the biggest and most subtle element of that is you don't fight for belts for 3 rounds. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? Like you
exactly.
can't like you're an attraction at that point, which is fine, and that's a definitely a niche in MMA. But if you want to be in this upper echelon with guys like Sean, you're gonna need to start fighting with 5 rounds.
And
Yep.
another thing, I understand what you're saying, Zach. Like he's a matchup nightmare. Like Sean's a matchup nightmare for Paulo Costa. I mean, because like you said, he does a weird thing where Sean's not the most, he's high volume, but he does a good job of cutting off the ring without even throwing punches. You feel his presence. You feel all 6'1" of whatever he is. You feel him. There's a lot of guys like that in boxing. Adrian Broner was like that once upon a time. Paulie said the same thing about Broner. He doesn't throw a lot of punches, but he cuts off the ring really, really well. Here's my thing. How do you explain the Izzy fight? Like he was just standing there and he was just taking leg kicks. It's like you're waiting for something to happen with Paulo Costa. You're just waiting for the eureka moment in a fighter. And even I think a 3-round fight would have been better for him. You know, he's a duck and dump type of guy. Duck your head and dump as many shots as you possibly can within a fight. But I mean, like at a certain point, if you want to talk about like belts and champions, I mean, there's a clear delineation, and it's like he hasn't had his big splash moment there. So that's my whole thing. It's like, yeah, Sean Strickland did his job, but it's kind of the same thing we see from Paulo Costa in a myriad of fights that he's had in the UFC.
Yeah, so I mean, just a quick question: is Sean's next fight for the belt? Because right now it sounds like Izzy versus Du Plessis is going to be happening later this year. Is Sean up next?
It feels like he's the, it just feels kind of in the most natural way that he has to fight the winner of that fight. It feels like there's unfinished business, but also kind of, there's unfinished fighting for both kind of stories as well. It feels like Sean definitely deserves some get back with Izzy in a lot of ways, and it feels the same way for Du Plessis, because it really feels like Sean's unstoppable unless that South African is in there with the octagon across from him.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
he's
like,
sorry, go ahead.
yeah, the Izzy DDP fight has to happen. We've talked about it for so long. I think that's the first fight that has to happen. And Izzy, if he comes out of that, I think it's straight to Sean. I think it's straight to Sean. You probably want to get your get back there. But if Drakus wins, I mean, a rematch against the guy that a lot of people think that you lost to. So, as long as the Izzy Drakus fight happens first, I think both storylines could play out really, really well, depending on the results of those fights.
And we'll talk about it here in a little bit later, but there is news today that Hamzat is out of his fight next week with
Ooh,
Robert
yeah.
Whittaker. So I think that was the number one contender fight. So I think Sean Strickland now moves into that spot. I think it may even be wise for him to maybe show up and weigh in as a backup for the Izzy Du Plessis fight. I don't know what you guys think, but I think the biggest term in MMA is opportunity and always being ready. And if he's able
I
to get
think
a chance there,
the
those are two guys
backup,
he's talked before.
I think even in boxing before I was into UFC and before the world was into UFC, I think the idea of the replacement person, I think that's such an overrated kind of role. Like I think in the case of Dricus and Izzy, like that fight is gonna happen if it gets scheduled. Like both of them could have a broken left and right leg. I think they'll just fight sitting down. You know what I mean? I don't think it's necessarily a prize position, but I do think even with this TKO deal, do it WWE. Be like, before the fight starts, be like, hey, Sean's fighting the winner of this. Like, just do it. Because I understand that it's like you have to keep it unsaid and all that, but why? Like, it really creates like a real fun kind of atmosphere if you're like, hey, this is a title fight, and the next title fight with this belt is going to be against Sean, no matter who wins. I think that would be awesome. And honestly, it just streamlines the booking and makes everything easy for Dana and all them up there.
And moving on from the co-main event, we had an incredible main event with Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev. And we see, obviously, Islam kept the belt and he did it with a finish. And the guy just always seems like he's hunting for a finish no matter what. But I think the biggest takeaway for me from this fight was Dustin Poirier, the heart of Dustin Poirier just in there fighting against the number one pound for pound guy in the world. And I think he gave Islam the best test he's had this far in his career. I don't know what you get. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I think this fight was super interesting. I would love to get your guys' thoughts on the gold gloves, because I was having a conversation and I do think it's cool, but there has to be a distinction between contender and champion to me.
Yeah, I agree.
That was something one of my friends had said, and that friend in question was there at the fights. Dustin and Islam, two of my best friends, got to go to their first UFC event. And because obviously it was in the great state of New Jersey at Prudential Center. And when they were there, they said, that the card was great, the event is great, but then you get to the main event in the first round, and Islam seems like he's gonna end this fight, and they're going home early. And then as the fight goes along, and I think you take it for granted, especially in the building, because you're rooting so hard for Dustin, you take for granted how great of a fight it was, really how back and forth it was, because there was definitely chances where it didn't seem like Islam was in real trouble, but it did seem like Dustin was building momentum to maybe getting to that point of him being in trouble. And it really felt, even with, a submission, and that was maybe a little, I'm struggling to find the word, but it just felt like it kind of petered off at the end and didn't have the big bang that everyone wanted it to. But it really felt, when you go back and watch those five rounds, that it lived up to the hype that the kind of two guys had built over the last 2 or 3 months.
Everything up to the Darce choke, which really essentially ended the fight. I was with you, Zach, and I was watching the fight, and I saw Dustin tap a split second before you did, and I was like, it's over. But that is the best possible that up until that up until he tapped, that was probably the best possible performance I've seen against Islam Makhachev. Again, we talk about 155. His resume is the thinnest. I mean, he had a streamline to the belt, and we talk about how Volkanovski pushed in. Maybe he won the first fight. That's the best performance. Dustin Diamond Poirier had the best performance against Islam Makhachev. And in the back of your mind, if if you're a UFC or a cage guy or a fight guy, you have your heart and then you have your brain. Your heart says Dustin, but there's a reason why the brain is the control center, because you know the wrestling and the grappling from Islam Makhachev is going to come through at some point, rather later than sooner, whether it be sooner rather than later, you know it's going to come. And Dustin was able to hold it off for practically the entire fight again until the Darce choke. I mean, like, how many stuffed takedowns did Dustin Poirier have? I was just looking in amazement. And what that fight told me more than anything is that he can still go. It's just the heart. Dustin could still go. He's as good as anyone in lightweight, which is not an easy feat, the deepest division in the UFC, and he's still among the best, 35 years of age. How you feel, Dustin? What's in your heart? Do you really want to do this? I think sometime in the near future, there will be another title shot, depending on how things match up. I don't think he retires. Other people are saying that he does. But what I can say about this fight is that it's much closer than what the scorecard says, win or loss. I think if you're Dustin Poirier, you have to be happy regardless.
Yeah, I think the
Yeah.
question. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you're good, Zach.
I think the question is not whether he can do it or not, because I think we all know Dustin Poirier can still do it. He is one of the best lightweights in the world. It's just whether he wants to do it anymore, whether he has one more title push in him, because that was his last. That was or not his last necessarily, but that was his third shot at the belt. And Dustin Poirier has a resume that. He doesn't need an undisputed belt to get into the Hall of Fame at this point. However, he had to run into the three greatest lightweights of all time to try to get that belt. And I'm talking about Khabib Nurmagomedov, Charles Oliveira, and now Islam Makhachev. And you run into all three of those guys, and it's just like almost like a bad string of luck because Dustin is good enough to be the world
It's
champion.
Zach, it's not even the three greatest lightweights of all time. It's a real argument for three of the top five greatest pound for pound fighters at their peak. Like it's almost unbelievable bad luck on Dustin's part in just timing wise.
And he put up an incredible performance, I feel like, against all of them. Especially against Islam, I feel like this was his best title performance yet. And he stopped all the takedowns. He started building momentum, started landing big shots on Islam. I mean, you guys saw Islam's face going into the fifth round. He was cut up everywhere and still going. And I think it's just a testament to how good Islam Makhachev really is, because the guy walked through fire with Dustin Poirier. Because when you fight Dustin Poirier, you have to go through the fire because he fights. He's a fighter. He's going to bring it to you, and
And
he went
also
right
this
through it.
right it, and we also look at the bad part of the resume to kind of heighten how great he was. Only fighter to ever say you could beat Conor McGregor twice. You beat Conor McGregor once, you got back in there again, and you beat him again. No one else can say that. And back to the point I was just going to make, I think right now, and even how Mahdi talked about Dustin, he's such a great fighter that there's almost an inevitability to his chances and where he'll be, and he'll get another chance and things like that. I think that inevitability is a bit naive. I think when you look at the run he just went on, his last win, can you guys see him getting a win like that again? Building that amount of momentum to
I
then
absolutely can.
be to them being put the pedestal, whatever, slingshot into a main event like that again, where you have an entire arena on the other side of the country from where you're even from rooting for you. I just don't know. And yeah, and Mata, you say yes, but then it's like, I understand that. And it's like, well, first of all, there needs to be some time in between now and then, right? So how old is he right now? He's
35.
35, I
So
think.
he's 35, it's 2024. The only logical earliest time for this to happen is 2026, right? So that's a
I believe
37-year-old guy. That's his first chance at the run. So just in our world, we're saying first chance, he just does it again. That's now a 37-year-old guy possibly going up there with Islam now 2 years more, 2 years extended champion. He's now been champion for 2 more years than he was before, 2 years better than he was before. I don't know when this run and then this championship win subsequently is going to happen. And I do love Dustin, but even from his perspective, just mentally, it feels like this was the end. And yeah, he could be an attraction and make a lot of money in this last 2 or 3 years. But if we're talking like actual champion holding the belt going on Good Morning America, I just don't, that's just not what I envision for him.
I agree with I'm sorry. Let me go real
Yeah, good
quick.
jump in.
I agree with Chris because I think it, how many chances can you give a guy to get a belt before it just becomes, okay, we're giving him a belt or a chance because he's Dustin Poirier? There's a
Tom.
lot of guys flying in lightweight, and I don't think you can just, after three title losses now, even if Dustin Poirier goes out and beats another big contender, you can't just immediately hand him the title shot. There's a reason Max Holloway hasn't gotten another title shot yet at featherweight, because he lost to Volk three times. And there's only so many chances you can get. Yes, Max Holloway just went on an absolute high, and now he's going to get another title shot likely against Ilya. So yes, maybe Dustin can turn it around in that way. But how long did it take him to do that? Like Chris said, it could be another 2 or 3 years before Dustin gets his next shot. And I don't know if he's been talking so long about retiring. I don't know if he has one more of those runs in him.
The age
And we
is
can't.
the age is perhaps the big thing. Sorry to interrupt, but age is perhaps the biggest thing, and that's why I said again, I would love to see him do it, but most likely he will retire. If you're talking about his actual ability, because yes, we are talking about the deepest division, and historically, like now it's guys like Islam and Dustin himself, and but before it was Khabib, it was Conor, and it was Tony, but he's one of the best at 155. It's not like he's like a guy who's teetering off, and maybe you want to get, this isn't like a Tony Ferguson type of thing. This is Dustin Poirier. He's one of the absolute best. He's one of the best in that division, hands down. I mean, if you talk about ability, the age, yes, because the age goes into attrition, and mentally you're like, how much longer do I really want to do this? But if you're just talking about ability, 2, 3 years down the line, and we've seen older guys in the UFC, there's a Jim Miller. Jim Miller, never a champion, before you 1 year old, still kicking. You see older guys, Anderson Silva hit his peak at 37 years old, 10 fight win streak. That was Anderson Silva at his best. We see Kamaru Usman. We talk about him not being done. He's 34 years old. He's going to be fun as a contender. I mean, like, I'll say this about Dustin. Yes, the mental thing is there, but for a guy that talented and one of the best in one of the deepest divisions, it ain't over until it's over. Until the gloves are off, he's still fighting. He's still fighting.
I
And
think the question.
one more just for me, like just this whole Dustin thing, like we're kind of giving perspective of kind of the kid at the Papa Shot at the carnival who just keeps his parents will keep paying for the money, keep giving him chances. We're just not acknowledging the line of kids
Yeah, the line.
behind him, and the line of kids behind him is a top 10 list that Jalen Turner barely cracks. Like that is a very impressive top 10 and a very mad group of kids behind him that I don't think are going to wait for him to take 30 chances to finally make the shot and get the stupid stuffed animal. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
that's a
Like,
good
you
analogy.
can talk about Dustin all you want and continue to shine that spotlight on him, but one day, one of these guys is going to shove him off the stage and is going to take that spotlight for themselves, and they're not going to wait around for him to try,
And
try,
like he
try. You know what
said,
I mean?
to wrap this segment up, he mentioned that he doesn't want the sport to retire him. And we've seen guys overstay their welcome in the
Yeah.
UFC. It feels like like Tony Ferguson, perhaps. He went on
Well,
an
the sport in
incredible run.
general, too. The sport, you could overstay your welcome. You know, Tito Ortiz, Chuck Liddell, people like that.
So and
Chael Sonnen's fighting this
Tony
week.
Ferguson
Chael's fighting
is
this week.
Tony Ferguson is on a currently, I think, 7 or 8 fight losing streak. And I don't want to see Dustin, and Dustin doesn't want to see himself go out like that, where he's just losing over and over again until it's like, okay, it's time to hang it up. He wants to go out the top of his game, and he wants to go spend time with his family and be with his daughter. So that's something I think MMA fans and just fighting fans have to respect about Dustin Poirier. He's done what he's needed to do, and he doesn't really, I don't know if he really has it in him to go through an entire process of trying to get that shot
I just don't
back.
know what gloves
But
I don't know what gloves you would want to leave on the mat other than the gold
yeah.
ones. You know what I mean? Why would you want to retire in any other way aside from in possibly the greatest spotlight you'll ever have? To me, that's where I would go.
No, I don't think there's
And
another
I
way
get
to
again, I'm a scrawny kid from New Jersey in his bedroom saying that as well. You know, and I'm not a guy who's dedicated 30 years to the craft, so he can do whatever he wants.
But I don't think there's a better way to say it besides there's no better gloves to leave on the ground than the gold ones. And he had a shot at it, and I think that was one of his best performances, win or lose. And I think that's a good one to go out and be proud of going out on your shield and going out in the title fight against the number one pound for pound guy in the world and one of the greatest fighters I think we've seen, especially in this division. But to move on, talking about title fights, we're going to be talking about this weekend where Gervonta Tate Davis is going to be taking on Frank Martin on June 15th. Davis defending his WBA lightweight title against the undefeated Frank Martin. Tank's coming in here at 29-0. Frank Martin's coming in here in 18-0. Tank obviously 27 knockouts to his record, with Frank Martin 12 knockouts to his record. Both southpaw fighters. They both have very similar reaches. Martin's a little bit taller than Davis, but that's nothing Davis isn't used to. He usually does have the height disadvantage. However, I think the experience in this one is the true teller of what we're going to see this weekend, because Gervonta Davis has been doing this a lot longer. Frank Martin started at the age of 17, and Tank Davis started at the age of 7. And I think when you're talking about main event spotlights, I think this is Gervonta Davis's dance. So, what's your guys' thoughts on this weekend? What's your takes?
I think obviously whenever a Tank fight kind of rolls around the schedule, it's always kind of Tank's one of my favorite not only boxers to watch but just combat sport athletes to watch. I like him off out of the ring, in the ring, everything about Tank I really enjoy. And this is another challenge for him. Not a challenge that I think is going to really test him in any major way, similar to a lot of the challenges he's faced recently, and kind of almost similar to the conversation we just had about Dustin. And it feels like he's had almost the opposite effect of that. He's had the bad luck of really not having great challengers, great rivals, great opponents that have really kind of built his legacy around him. It feels like there has been guys like Ryan and people of that nature, but when you really look at his resume and things like that, there isn't guys who are recurring that are kind of his greatness that really give him a challenge. And I think that has hurt his resume up until this point. Maybe not his resume, but it's hurt his, again, for lack of aura. But kind of going into this fight and just pushing forward, thinking scheduling for this guy, that has to be in mind that, he can continue to beat all these undefeated guys, but it gets to a point where really all that does is kill an undefeated guy's momentum, like a guy like the challenger here, and also just kind of adds to a narrative that may be forming where it's, I don't know if Tank's necessarily getting challenged in a major way ever.
I think that's been the question for a long time about Tank Davis. Is he fighting high enough competition for how good he is? And I think this weekend's an interesting matchup because he's fighting a fellow southpaw. And it's always interesting when we get matchups where, especially with the southpaws, where you have the same stances. However, Tank does have experience fighting southpaws more recently than Frank Martin. Frank Martin, I don't think, has ever really fought a guy at this level who is a southpaw, where Tank Davis has. And I think that's really going to show on Saturday, because Tank is just so good at recognizing patterns. He's so good at setting traps. He's so good at setting guys up, where Frank Martin is going to be experiencing, I don't want to say a new something he hasn't experienced, because I'm sure in training camp he's only fighting southpaw fighters. However, when you're fighting Tank Davis and it's the first time you're fighting a southpaw like Tank Davis, you're going to run into some trouble. I think that's where Tank Davis is going to thrive in this matchup.
Let me say this, and you just said something about I'll go through my little soliloquy. What I will say about this is this: for Gervonta Tank Davis, it's all downside. I mean, you're talking about a guy who just came from prison. You're talking about a guy who's recently separated from Floyd Mayweather. That's another thing. They're going back and forth with one another. And people are having questions. Yes, Tank Davis, if you talk about the sweet, if you talk about pound for pound rankings, right? Sweet science and a knockout. How many other guys are better than Tank Davis? Maybe Bud Crawford knock you out and box you up. He's one of the best in the business. But the guys on his resume and the guys that he's fought at 135 were tailor-made for Tank. Frank Martin is the one fight, the first real fight that's not tailored for Tank. Slick black fighter who could fight off the back foot like butter, who's an amazing counterpuncher, who's bigger. This is like Tank's like for real coming out party. Like, this is like, can you beat him? And they sparred before in practice. That's another thing. That's why I wanted to go back to your point. He sparred Shakur. He sparred Dev, and we all see the video of what he did to Dev. And he sparred Frank. So it's not a matter of whether or not he can assess these guys. It's not even a matter of styles. Can you beat them? And I think if Tank is going to win this fight, it's going to be by knockout. And if he loses, yes. And if he loses this fight, his first fight away from Floyd Mayweather, the sentiment and the word around town will be that Floyd Mayweather made Gervonta Tank Davis, and that will ultimately kill him. This fight, and against a guy like Ghost Martin, Frank Martin, that's not an easy fight. I mean, fights off the back foot, extremely clean counterpuncher, works the jab really well, does everything you want out of a. And This is the fight for Tank. He sparked them all. He's fought Shu Shu Carrington. If anybody knows anything about Shu Shu Carrington, Shu York City, coming out of Brooklyn, he's a dog as well. But this is it for Tank. This is it. This is what you got. That's all I can say. What you got?
Exactly. I definitely agree with you. I think Frank Martin is a worthy opponent for Tank. And I think, however, though, I do think, though, Tank has the advantages in most departments. I think we're talking power, you got to lean Tank. When you're talking about counterpunching, you got to go Tank again. And just pure boxing IQ and everything that goes into it, you got to go Tank. Except the one thing that I think Frank Martin has on his side is his explosiveness and his athleticism. Because I
Very
think
athletic.
while Tank Davis is as great of a boxer as he is, he can sometimes lack the pretty footwork. He can sometimes lack some of the more athletic ability to move around the ring, where Frank Martin is more mobile than him. And I think if he wants to be able to beat Tank Davis, he's got to try to be unpredictable. He's got to explode into him, because what Tank Davis is great at is recognizing patterns. That's how he beat Ryan Garcia. That's how he beats most people he fights. Ryan Garcia spams his left hook. Tank realizes it and traps him, sets him right up into it, and is able to get two knockdowns off of Ryan overextending on a hook. And that's just what he is so good at. That's his game, is setting people up, setting traps, recognizing patterns, and putting you down. And when you have that much power, you can put anybody down if you can recognize a pattern. And that's exactly what Gervonta Davis is good at. So Frank Martin's got to be sure to stay out of that, and stay out of being predictable, stay out of being a pattern fighter. And he's got to be unpredictable. He's got to try to make big moments in this fight, and make it a fight. Make Tank fight, because Tank, I think, out of every professional or championship level fighter, it's scored by some sort of sports analytics system. I don't remember what the name of it is, that he throws the least amount of punches out of anybody at the championship level. However, he lands at one of the highest percentages out of anybody at the championship level. So you got to make Tank fight. You can't let him sit back and read you the whole time until he's able to tag you. You've got to make him fight. You got to be unpredictable. And I think that's Frank Martin's best method of victory. However, let's get into predictions. Madi, who you got this weekend?
Again, as you said before, Frank, I mean, I can tell you right now, Tank Davis in the earlier rounds, he's gonna give up a lot of rounds. Like, that's how he fights. Like, you just said it a lot. You gotta make him fight. It's probably not gonna happen. You're gonna win the couple of rounds, and then he catches you. You heard Rolly Romero say it. He doesn't punch hard, but the accuracy. Give me Tank Davis for this fight. I think, again, when you talk about the sweet science and a knockout, he's just a different level. He's an A fighter. Frank Martin, as of right now, is a B plus fighter. Regardless, if you're Frank, you can't lose, because even if you do lose on the scorecards, this is only like good work. That's what they call it in boxing. It's good work for you. I'll take Tank Davis for now. What you got? That's what I'm asking. What you got?
I'm gonna ride with you, man, on that one. I think Tank Davis gets this one done. And when you're watching Tank Davis fight, I don't see how they go anywhere else but knockout. And I think Tank Davis is able to come in here and have a welcome back party, because 14 months off now, he's gonna come back, and I think he's gonna make a big statement of, because the question recently is, who's the face of boxing? And I think Tank Davis is ready to come in here and make a statement and make
Thank you,
his claim
Canelo.
to be the face of boxing. Yeah. To come in and make himself the face of boxing, as well as prove that he's not just the makings of Floyd Mayweather, that he's more than that. So I'm gonna go Tank by knockout. But moving on from that, we are going to talk about this UFC Fight Night main event. We have Alex Perez versus Tatsuro Taira, the undefeated prospect out of Japan, I believe. And I think this is an interesting one. Taira is 24 years old. Alex Perez is 32 years old. Taira coming in with a 5-inch reach advantage. And as I mentioned, age difference is, I think, about 8 years now, 24 to 32.
Eight.
Everything else on these fighters is pretty similar if we're talking about significant strikes and takedown averages. However, Alex Perez does have more experience, although a lot of those fights he's lost against the bigger names. He has fought Davison Figueiredo, he has fought Pantoja, and he has fought Makhachev. So even though they are losses, they are experience. And I think he's a guy that the moment can't necessarily be too big for him, because he's been in it. So he's fighting at this up and coming prospect. How are we feeling about Tyra coming in here and getting a chance to make a statement?
Alex Perez, you did mention my point. Nicolau, he's just coming off of a really, really good win against Nicolau. I believe it was a round two TKO, if I'm not mistaken, but that was a really good fight.
Browns
And you see,
TKO,
like,
yep.
yeah, and then you look down and you see guys like Alexander Pantoja, you see Davison Figueiredo, you see Formiga, you see guys like De La Rosa. I mean, like, he's getting calloused. It's good work, as I just said in our last segment. It's good work. And at a certain level, you absorb that knowledge and you come back. But Zach, there's a reason why we have gatekeepers. I understand he's the fifth, I want to say he's the fifth best flyweight in the world as of right now. But Tatsuro Taira, I mean, I saw his fight against, oh my God, what was it? And it's everywhere. It's Carlos Hernandez, the first round
Yep.
knockout. He stuffs the initial takedown. They go to the ground and he's able to switch guard and get on top. And then the knockout happened. Like, this guy is just, you see stars sometimes and you're immediately able to, like, point them out, like, ooh, this guy good. And he has power in both hands and he's a very slick and crisp boxer. He's not overzealous like Perez. That's one thing I noticed about Alex Perez. He likes to throw a lot. Sometimes the IQ does get out of there. And then and against a guy like Tyra, who fights nearly perfect on the feet, doesn't overextend himself, and it fights comfortably. Give me the young prospect who's number 13. One's number five, one's number 13. But I think this is a tale of two cities much closer than they actually are.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing for Tyra is his ability to kind of mix it up. The power in his hands have
Yeah.
been really, really talked about so far at the start of his UFC career. And I think that him getting this shot now to headline a card so early on against a pretty gritty veteran who has fought against the top of the division, this is definitely a chance for him to make a statement and let everybody know he's here. Let this flyweight division know that he has arrived. And this, we're starting to see the spread of MMA around the world because we're starting to see fighters from places all over from countries all over the place. Now we have a couple stars from Japan who are starting to come to the USA. I think he came through the Road to the UFC promotion that Dana White has going on, where he's bringing in all this new talent,
Yeah.
and we're starting to see it. We're starting to see stars emerge from all over the place, and it's the new generation of MMA, and I think Tyra is exactly that, the new generation of MMA. And unfortunately for Perez, I don't think that that benefits him at all because he's a guy who's going to be put, I feel like he's almost being put on the spot to be the gatekeeper, be the guy who's okay,
Yeah.
beat him, and now you can be a star in the UFC. That's why Tyra's getting his first headlining shot against Alex Perez, because he's the kind of guy that you get a win against. You say, look at his resume. Even though he's lost some of those fights, he's been in them. He's fought the best of the division. You can get a win over him. You can start to compete against the top of the division. So this is exactly what this is for him this weekend.
Sacrificial lamb.
A good fight with Tyra, and I hope that he does give him a test, because you always love to see a young prospect tested, especially when they are undefeated. The O is something that is not so common in MMA. So, do I think it's kind of a sacrificial lamb deal? Yes. Do I think Perez still has a shot? I mean, in any sort of fighting, you always have a puncher's chance. However, I think it is slightly more than that for Perez. The experience, everything he's done in the sport, as long as he's been in it, some of the wins, the highs, the lows, all contribute to his experience. So I think he will give Tyra a test. I don't necessarily, maybe not think as much of a sacrificial lamb as we've seen guys be in the past. However, he is kind of just the gatekeeper here, and I think he's going to help Tyra introduce his name into the flyweight division. But to wrap up that segment, I think it's clear who we both think is going to win. I think you mentioned Tyra earlier, but final prediction.
Yeah, it's gonna be Tyra. I mean, too hot. He's a hot rocket. He's got a rocket ship, a missile, if you will, attached to his back. I just think it's his time to shine, and I think they gave him a guy to line up and clear off.
Finish, or you think we get a decision?
I think we actually do get a finish. Again, Perez is sporadic and he likes to throw a lot. I think he could get a bit sloppy, and I just think Tyra's the slicker, crisper boxer who's more of a boxer rather than just a puncher.
I definitely agree. And I think he seven subs to his name on his record, along with four knockouts. I think he could get it done anywhere he wants to. If he wants to take it to the ground, Perez has been subbed twice by both Pantoja and I think Figueiredo, and those are just recently. I don't know his total losses by sub, but I do know those are very recent against tough guys. So I think that benefit, I think Tyra could get it done either way he wants to get it done. So I'm also going to go with Tyra by finish. I think he could get a dumb knockout or sub. But to move on from that, we do have some UFC news. Errol Hawani recently reported this week, after there was some uncertainty last week about Conor McGregor's current standing in UFC 303, it seems like all of the negativity went away at the end of last week. It seemed like we were back on. There was no problem. Chandler was in interviews talking about how the fight is going on. It is happening on June 29th. However, Helwani reported, I believe, on Monday or Tuesday that the UFC is putting feelers back out to try to find a possible replacement for the main event, likely on Conor McGregor's side. However, nothing's official. Nothing's come from the UFC in terms of this. We've had free fights on YouTube, privated, and then they've been put back up. We saw a promo last week during the fight night. And according to Helwani, we should be receiving official word within the next day or two. Hopefully that comes sooner or later. Monty, do you think we see Conor McGregor in the Octagon on June
Do
29th,
we
or
see
what
Conor
happens?
McGregor? Zach, what is Conor McGregor doing right now? What do you think he's doing as we're talking about him on this podcast? I don't know. Here's why I say yes. As much criticism as I've given Conor McGregor of the theatrics, of the fact that he's held up an entire division, the fact that he does some things that are sometimes questionable, I do believe he has a fighter's heart, right? Sometimes you question it, especially when I think it's more of a boxing term. We call it silk pajamas. As soon as the guy reaches the top, he knocks out the guy in his division, or he becomes two-time undisputed, or he wins the belt. You don't see him fighting the best no more. You see him taking money fights and having long layoffs and fighting every 2 years. And when you look at the road for Conor McGregor, I remember watching the Notorious documentary. It was a guy who was sleeping in his girlfriend's, like, whose girlfriend was paying the bills, and he came from the bottom, and his father told him that he was going to be a waste man and someone who was going to be a mechanic because he didn't know what he wanted to be in life. And then he found fighting, and in a short amount of time he became MMA God, MMA Jesus of Nazareth. Literally, he was bigger than the sport itself. He was bigger than the discipline that had birthed him. And now you wonder with Conor, you see a different Conor who's a bit chubbier and has more weight on him, who slurs his words. Maybe he's doing drugs. We don't know what he's doing. He only cares about money. But I think at the end of the day, with a guy like Conor, I think with how crazy he is, there's certain artists that are crazy about their craft, and once you're able to grapple them in and tell them to come back, I think he'll remember why he has silk sheets and silk pajamas in the first place. I think he loves fighting. He's a crazy one, but I genuinely do think that he does love fighting.
I do think, though, there is the hope for him too that, hey, if he comes back and wins this fight,
Come
his
on.
name is Conor McGregor,
Champ, champ, champ.
and he can, yeah, exactly. He can kind of do whatever he wants. And if he can come back and even emphatically beat Michael Chandler, if he can go in there and finish him, if he can knock him out, who's going to tell Conor McGregor no, that he can't have another title shot? Because if he does continue this at 170, he has a chance to become the first triple champ ever, which would be very, very, and that definitely intrigues him, I think. And I think that's enough motivation to get him to come back and make a serious push. However, he is coming off the very long layoff after that injury. I mean, the complete leg snap. However, he does have a titanium rod in his leg apparently now. But I really don't know because he has all the money. He has everything he's ever wanted. It's harder to get out of bed in the morning when the sheets are silk. I don't know if Connor has it as much in his heart as we think he does because he kind of has it all now. And while he has it all, Michael Chandler has been waiting 2.5 years for Connor McGregor now. And I feel for the guy because
At this
this
point.
is his money fight. This is what everyone in their career works for, is to get their money fight, and this is quite literally the biggest money fight you can get in the sport. And he's had to wait so long for it, and now there's uncertainty that it might not happen. I feel for Michael Chandler in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. 2.5 years. I mean, at a certain point, if you're Michael Chandler, we talk about it all the time off camera, Zach. He's probably the guy with the most skill sets to take down in Islam. It's just the fight IQ. But if you look at Michael Chandler as a fighter, I mean, he's a guy that if his fight IQ doesn't go out the window in in the 10 seconds of every fight he's pretty much been in the UFC. I mean, he's a guy that could be one of the best in the world. Like his name could ring bells around the combat sports world. I mean, and when you're a guy with that much skill, the strength, the power in both hands, the wrestling, the grappling, you should be able to dig. You should be able to build a resume for yourself outside of one guy, right? You got to keep it going. Don't focus on this one guy because you will see your prime come and go. It's happening to some guys unwillingly, a Tom Aspinall in heavyweight. He's waiting for John Jones to come out. But Mike, you have the chance. I mean, I know you want your money fight and you went through a whole season of tough with him, and now it's been like a couple of years, but you got to get your money some other how. You got to make your money some other way. You just do. But it's Conor McGregor. I understand why you want that fight, but if it's not going to happen, don't dwell on it.
I gotta, I keep saying it. You gotta feel bad for Michael Chandler, man.
Yeah,
This is
sucks.
all the going through the full training camp after waiting for so long, not even knowing what the weight was going to be for the longest time. And here we are. We're almost 2 weeks out, 2, 3 weeks out from this fight. And we don't even know if it's going to happen. I don't even think Chandler knows if it's going to happen. And it's such a tough spot for him because he waited so long for it. If the UFC offers him another name on June 29th, do you think he takes it? Because that name will likely be, all jokes aside, Alexander Volkanovski or Charles Oliveira, because Volk's offered to step in, and Charles is reportedly a backup fighter for this event. It's such a tough draw because you're fighting Volk, which almost feels like a lose-lose because of how loved Volk is. It's definitely not going to sell as much. Or you got to fight Charles again. And I honestly don't think that's a fight he wins against Charles. So I don't think this is necessarily a winning situation for Michael Chandler. I almost feel like if he is offered another name on June 29th, I almost feel like he doesn't take it because I feel like he's just going to keep waiting for Conor because he's waited this long. He might as well, I guess, wait another a couple more months if they do,
Really?
if it really doesn't happen. Because I mean, realistically, where could you push it? Maybe the Sphere. I mean, Conor McGregor has to beat the Sphere, I feel
Yeah, he
like.
does. He has to be
So
the. Yeah.
if you put Conor McGregor it back in the Sphere, I think yes, Chandler would definitely take the opportunity because as Dana's made it out to be, it's going to be an incredibly stacked card, and you can only imagine what that's going to do pay-per-view wise. However, you miss out on an opportunity now, and you miss out on even more opportunities to fight in the future because you're still waiting for Conor McGregor.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about, man. Because at a certain, it's like, I think the MMA world, not just Michael Chandler, we need to look for life past Conor, right? We have to look for life after Conor. I mean, Conor McGregor's a big name, but at some point, you gotta let it go. I actually think that a fight against you brought up Charles Oliveira, the other fight against the oh my God, you just said his name. I'm blanking.
Out Volkanovski.
Against Alexander Volkanovski, who the joke is like he steps in every 10 seconds. I think like Volk is loved, but what I think people love more than fighters are actual fights. If Michael Chandler's able to go in there and spark Alexander Volkanovski, because he does have the power. If Ilya got the power, you know for a fact Michael Chandler has the power. A guy like that, if you go out and you spark Volk, it may work counterintuitively. It may have an opposite effect. They may love you now because it's not just who you beat. Like Alexander Volkanovski, you beat him, but it's how you beat them. You knocked out Alexander Volkanovski, and court of public opinion is a funny thing because they can hate you one day, and then the very next day they could all love you. That could very well be a situation that Michael Chandler looks at if he fights a guy like Volk. And who's to say that maybe he beats? Who's to say that he loses to Charles Oliveira again? Fight IQ goes out the window in much of those fights where he's going through the ringer. He's lost by his own sword, by his own accord. Again, I think Michael Chandler is way too talented to be waiting for a guy. Obviously, again, Conor McGregor, but he has the skills to create the pull for to make his name a big one in the UFC.
Yeah. But he's starting to run out of time, man. Waiting for Conor for
Yeah,
this
man.
long, it almost feels like we haven't heard Michael Chandler's name in a long time. And if this fight doesn't happen, it's not only a huge loss for the UFC and everything else, because I don't think Conor really cares. The guy has all the money he needs. Plus, he's got his whiskey brand, he's got his beer brand. He's making money regardless. The biggest loser of this entire situation has got to be Michael Chandler, man. And it's either way, he's going to be taking a lesser payday without Conor McGregor in the octagon with him. But then you got to possibly fight against Charles Oliveira again, which I think it's such a tough fight. Yeah, who's to say he doesn't win it? But at the same time, how much time does he have left to try to get back to a title since he's waited so long now for Conor McGregor? However, I don't know, man. I'm really
So
hoping that Conor
gallic
is
man.
there on June 29th. And apparently we're going to receive word within the next day or two. So hopefully that comes soon. But moving on, more UFC news. Khamzat Chimaev is reportedly out of his bout that was supposed to take place next week in Saudi Arabia against Robert Whittaker, the fight that was supposed to be the number one contender match for the middleweight title. And Khamzat's out again. I mean, this is not something we're not used to. Khamzat has pulled out of a lot of fights, especially recently. And it felt like this was finally his big break that we've been waiting for to get to a title shot because he has the talent. Khamzat Chimaev is a monster. Nobody's been able to figure out the puzzle. Gilbert Burns had a close one with him, though. Kamaru Usman seemed to be a little bit closer one with him, but he still won every fight. He's undefeated for a reason. He's able to take down his opponents and dominate on them on the ground. The problem hasn't been in the octagon for Khamzat Chimaev. The problem has been getting into the octagon, and here we are again, pulling out of another big name fight. And apparently, we're going to find out pretty soon the replacement fight, who's going to be stepping in. I just saw on Instagram maybe a couple minutes ago, Paulo Costa has thrown his name into the hat. So, I mean, what's your thoughts, first of all, Mahdi, on Khamzat pulling out of another event?
I mean, so quite literally, we just finished talking about Michael Chandler, and that's more of an optimistic thing for me because, again, it's in the cage. It's a really a problem in the cage. You look at it for Michael Chandler because, again, I'm not worried too about Conor McGregor whether he shows or not. I think the problem is, Mike, you fight good and you win your fights. You're a huge name in the UFC. A guy like Khamzat Chimaev at this point can't even get into the ring. We're talking about a guy who against Nate Diaz, which was really supposed to be a sacrificial lamb moment to you. You're welcome to the party, like welcome to the big show, welcome to the sugar show moment for you. You show up like 10 pounds overweight. Like this guy cannot get into a ring. So at a certain point, like this guy had a rocket ship strapped to his back. Oh my God, he's gonna be huge pay-per-view. Really, where Shavkat is really where Khamzat's supposed to be. Where you think about it, like this guy on the rise who's really the boogeyman, no one wants to fight. At this point, Khamzat to me looks like a novelty. He has all the skill in the world, and we're not talking about a 38-year-old Michael Chandler who's waiting for a big fight. We're talking about a 30-year-old guy who can't get out of his own way, and it's just disappointing, really, because this guy's a spectacular fighter when he's there, but you got to be there.
Yeah, it's just also just the string of bad luck with obviously the weight miss is on him, but an injury is something that you can't necessarily prevent, and it's such a shame that it happens a week before such a big event is against Robert Whittaker, because this was his chance to finally get that title shot, the thing that he's always been meant to live up to since he got into the UFC. And I honestly don't know where he goes from here, because it's incredibly difficult for the UFC to try to put him in a title shot anytime soon because he's not making fights. He's not fighting the best fighters because he has to pull out, or they have to change around the fight order because he can't make weight. So I think he's going to be put on the back burner pretty soon. And that title shot that if he won next weekend felt guaranteed, I think now goes to either Whittaker or Sean Strickland. And to me, I think it goes to Sean Strickland now because of his last win. Because of his history with the two guys who are going to be fighting in the title shot, Sean Strickland just jumped him because of him pulling out of this fight. So, in terms of replacements, would you be a fan of Paulo Costa stepping? I mean, we haven't seen Paulo Costa this active, I don't think ever.
Which
So
I
if Paulo Costa,
appreciate.
definitely. Always good to see a guy being active, especially Paulo Costa. He had his fight against Whittaker earlier this year. And he had some close moments. He rocked him in that first round. If there was a couple more seconds, he might have beat Robert Whittaker. So Are you a fan of maybe giving him another chance, getting the
Yes.
rematch here on short notice?
Just because of what you just said, because the thought is still there. A couple more moments. That fight was very, very close. And that was Paulo Costa, like almost there. It's a matter of inches with the guy. And that's the closest amount of inches I saw from him from greatness. Like he was almost there. Like that lingers with you. That's the only reason I'm willing to give him another chance. And again, middleweight with the circumstances that are going on, Khamzat's here and they're middling guys. Paulo Costa's still right there. So you still have a bunch of time to make good and potentially put yourself in the higher echelon of that division. That's probably the one fight for Paulo Costa, but that's a make or break for me, Zach. That's the last straw. If it's another dud, if he doesn't impress me, then I'm pretty much out of him. But I will give him that fight.
Yeah, I mean, another 5-round fight he would be stepping into there. And I mean, Robert Whittaker, a guy he lost to, Robert Whittaker's always been the top of the division, too. He's one of the boogeymen of the middleweight division. So, Paulo Costa, even especially on short notice, being a little bit of a company man there, I think he does earn a little bit of respect because of his activity lately after being inactive for so long and getting so much thrown onto his name because he was not showing up. He wasn't fighting, he was pulling out of fights. This would be his third time fighting this year if he does it. And really, not a bigger moment for him to do it, to step up on short notice against, I think, the number two guy now, a number two or number three guy in the division. Even if he doesn't win, I think if he goes in there and put, because I think even going for a 5-round fight, he learned with Sean Strickland last week that he can't play the points game, he can't play the gas tank game. He's got to just go in there and go for a finish. And I think that if he goes into this event 1 week short notice, we might get that old Paulo Costa mentality back, where it's okay, I got to finish this guy in the first 2 rounds or I'm going to lose. And I think that we might get that from him. I think that finally might be what draws it out of him. So, am I a fan of him getting a short minute or last minute replacement? Yeah, I actually think so. I think it makes for a pretty interesting main event because the two guys have seen it before. They have seen each other before. Costa's obviously coming out of the fight camp, so he should be in shape. Whitaker's off of the full camp. He'll be in shape. I don't think you need too much prepping when you fought a guy before. And I think if you get these guys in the octagon together, I think we'll get fireworks next week. So I think they should make the replacement fight. I kind of hope it is, because honestly, I don't know who else you can put in the top middleweight to fight against Whitaker next
That's the
weekend.
thing. It's thin there. That's what saves him.
Yep, definitely, definitely. But we'll find out soon. Hopefully, more news on that. But that's going to just do it for our episode today. I had a great time talking with you, Marty. We had Chris earlier. He stepped out. He stepped out during the boxing segment. However, he was also, Chris Carino was also in the building today. So big shout out to my co-host. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Pound for Pound. Pound for Pound is a production of WFEV Sports. Check out the fights this weekend, and we'll see you next week for our post-fight reactions, as well as a little preview of UFC Saudi Arabia, which we talked about earlier. Good night, everybody.